In a book review in last Thursday's New York Times, Janet Maslin wrote, "Addiction memoirs often illustrate the same definition of insanity, yet the genre itself remains so addictive that readers keep hoping to discover something new. And perhaps readers will be able to learn something different about coping with methamphetamine addiction through David Sheff's book, Beautiful Boy, A Father's Journey Through His Son's Addiction," which is published by Houghton Mifflin. It's also the latest book to be featured by Starbucks, and it's about his son, Nick, who is now 25 and has been off drugs for the past 2.5 years. Nick has written his own account of his battles with addiction called Tweak, Growing Up on Methamphetamines. It's published by Ginny Seo and Athenaeum Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome both David and Nick Sheff to the show today. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much.
David, didn't your memoir grow out of an article you'd written for the New York Times Magazine in 2005?
Around that time, Nick was doing great. He'd started using drugs when he was pretty young and had it was a harrowing couple of years, but by then he had been in recovery for quite a while. And you know, I'm a writer, and I use my writing to process whatever we go through, but talked to Nick about it, and he was encouraging, and talked to the other people in our family, and we thought that maybe it would do some good to get the story out there. And so I put this together and submitted it to the Times Magazine, and they published it. And the reaction was, I was nervous about exposing our family to that kind of scrutiny, but the reaction was extraordinary. And the main thing that struck me was that people responded with their own stories, and long letters about our story is your family's story. And in some cases, they had much sadder endings. I mean, the difference was that their children, when it was parents writing me, that their children didn't make it.
But the tone of the book is quite different from the magazine article. Did your thinking change over the years? Or was it those letters that forced you to think about other things?
It was the letters, and it was also, there was a sense, I guess, I guess I learned more about this process, because, of course, after the magazine piece came out, I left the magazine piece on this optimistic note that Nick had been in recovery, and we'd had this extraordinary sort of reunion of our family, and
everything's going to be great from now on.
Everything's
going to
be great. And then, I didn't know what I know now. Addiction isn't that easy. It's an ongoing process, and many times there are multiple relapses, and Nick relapsed again. And when he relapsed again, we were back in the hell of it. And so I think the book now reflects a more realistic view of the ups and downs, and how hard it is for the addict and for the addict's family.
Now, Nick, you, as your father says, you gave him a go-ahead, but did you know he'd be revealing about so many personal details about your life?
I read the piece for sure before it came out, and then of course I read his book before, he gave the okay, to his editors and everything. But, I really believe in being really open and really honest. I mean, I feel like that's something that I hold on to as one of my, core beliefs. And, when I was growing up, I always felt really, sort of isolated and alone and scared and full of self-hatred and everything. And it really was, for me, it was really reading other people's work, authors that expose these inner worlds, Dennis Cooper or Yukio Mishima or Bukowski. Reading that stuff was what really made me feel less alone and less isolated. And so when my dad told me he wanted to write about, what had been going on, I was really supportive. I mean, because I do believe in that completely.
But I'm sure that because you were living this from your perspective, you were surprised by some of the things he wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I sort of had this idea, I guess, that, if I wanted to kill myself, which is what I was doing, through using, it was sort of a coward's way of killing oneself, very slow. And I sort of felt like if I was going to do that, that was my own business, and it wasn't going to affect anybody, and I wasn't going to care about, anybody else or whatever. But when I did read my dad's book, it did just bring it so clear to me that, everyone in my life is so affected by my actions, and, all the people that love me, are just were completely, brutalized by my own self-destruction. And, I don't live in a vacuum, and my actions do have consequences. And, I have a responsibility to the people that love me, to stay alive, because it's very selfish to do what I did.
David, your book, Beautiful Boy, starts at the very beginning with Nick's birth. Why did you start with that before the self-hatred that he says he started to feel?
Because most we felt that this could never happen to us. I mean, I grew up in drug culture. I'm 52 years old. So when I was a teenager and when I was at the beginning of, when I was throughout college, I mean, I used drugs. My friends used drugs. I inhaled. And everyone I know inhaled and did a lot more than inhaling. And yet, even so, as an adult, as a parent, I thought there was, I had this image of a drug addict, and a drug addict is somebody else. I mean, it's a different, it's somebody else. Other person's child would be in a drug addict, children of addicts, people who'd been abused, whatever it was. And I wanted to show that Nick was like so many of our kids. I mean, he was this bright-eyed, lovely, eager child. I mean, he did have to suffer through his parents' divorce. I mean, certainly wasn't perfect.
But a lot of kids suffer through divorces and don't become meth addicts.
Yeah, there was so
many. But he describes himself as feeling lonely and full of self-hatred. Were you aware of that?
I was aware at different times that there was stuff going on. I mean, everything wasn't ideal. And we sent Nick to therapists. I blame the divorce. I thought that it was really hard on him. And so we've sent Nick to therapists, but I guess I was not aware of the depth of what he describes as feeling disconnected from the world, and how consistent it was, and how much pain he was in for so much time. I wasn't aware, because part of it was that he was so good at presenting to me and to his mom and to his stepmom and to all of us what we wanted to see. And also parents, there's a certain amount of denial here. We don't want to see our children suffering.
On the other hand, your father's a writer, Nick, and you have become a writer. Do you see a connection there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I always have been really encouraged, I guess, my whole life to really process what I've been going through art and through writing and through music. And that's the thing that has really sustained me and gave me some sort of purpose or something in my life. I look to art, especially like really emotional and really vulnerable art that is really revealing, as a sort of as a guide, and I wanted to produce something that was sort of an answer to those great artists who have exposed so much of their lives to the world and been so courageous, doing that.
So when did you decide to write a book of your own? When you realized that your father would only be telling part of the story?
No, not at all, actually. I always have been writing, and even when I was on the street and homeless, I still had a little notebook that I was scribbling in all the time and stuff, and it was sort of compulsive, for me.
And you were on the street struggling to just get enough money to buy some more meth.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I put myself there, absolutely. It wasn't like I was, a victim of circumstance or anything. But an editor actually read my dad's article in the New York Times and approached me about, hey, would you maybe be interested in trying to tell your story? And she really encouraged me to, write about what I'd been going through. And so I kept sending her pages and, she kept encouraging me more and more and more. And then that led to the book.
And David, what was it like for you to read Nick's book?
It was really difficult, I guess is an understatement, because I knew that
it must have been difficult writing your own book.
It was difficult.
Of you were writing about things that had to be incredibly painful to dredge up again.
It was, and dredging it up was part of it. Also, part of it, I just didn't know how bad things had gotten for Nick. I didn't know how. I knew he had been in serious trouble, and I knew about, for instance, one time he ended up in the emergency room, but I didn't know about other times he'd ended up in the emergency room. I didn't know that he almost lost his arm because of an infection from shooting up. I didn't know that
he ballooned up to a point of, you've described it, what, is almost a basketball?
No, it wasn't that big. It was maybe a grapefruit.
Grapefruit's big on your arm.
Yeah.
So all those things.
Shaquille O'Neal can handle a grapefruit, but you're a slim guy.
Yeah, no, it was awful, yeah. So,
and on the other side of it, there was also an enormous amount of pride. I mean, he's my son, and he bravely went forward and told a story that was very difficult to tell, and he tells it with, first of all, his writing, I think, is beautiful, and second of all, it's so poignant. And he also comes out the other side, and there are a lot of books about addiction, but I think the thing that Nick does that's a little bit different is he shows, there are no platitudes in there. It really shows about the struggle and his struggle, and I think it informed, it certainly informed me about what it means to be a drug addict. It's I guess until, you know, unless you've been through what we've been through, unless you know somebody, you love someone, or you've been through it yourself. I don't know if you can completely get it, but you really get, I learned a lot from reading.
We're talking about the writers of two books that deal with the same drug addiction. David Sheff has written Beautiful Boy, A Father's Journey Through His Son's Addiction. And Nick Sheff has written Tweak, Growing Up on Methamphetamines. David, another thing that's remarkable about your account of Nick's drug problems is that you suffered a brain hemorrhage during the course of writing the book. Did that affect your ability to write?
It did.
What about your memory?
I spent a certain amount of time in the hospital without any memory whatsoever, to the point that I was asked, you know, it's a routine, I think, in the neuro ICU because they're testing different parts of your brain. They said, you know, what is your name? Well, I couldn't answer the question. I knew I should know the answer. It didn't seem like it was that hard of a question, but I didn't know who I was. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who the president was, which was, you know, maybe the only benefit of this kind of amnesia. But I went for it. It took me a while before I was able to think again, and it was inconceivable to write. I mean, my wife will tell you that I spent a lot of time just weeping because I couldn't face going back to this story in general, but I couldn't write a letter. But slowly, it became part of my recovery, I think, to sit down and piece together first the words and then the sentences and then the paragraphs and then the chapters. And it became a metaphor, I think, for recovering from a brain hemorrhage, putting it all back together.
You seem to be perfectly okay now.
Well, I don't know if I don't remember quite as well as I used to, but maybe that's just being 50.
Nick, were you on methamphetamines when your father had the brain hemorrhage?
No, I was sober then. And it's actually interesting because you know, we did both start writing our books around the same time, but, you know, yeah, then my dad had that, you know, the brain hemorrhage, which was so frightening, and, you know, it looked like at that point that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to, or for a while at least, to, you know, get back to writing and stuff, and I was still writing, and then, you know, not too long after that, I actually relapsed after I'd written maybe half of my book. So,
and do you know what led to the relapse? Because there's always, I don't know how accurate it is, but we always hear that methamphetamines can lead to brain damage. And I would have thought that that would have been a warning to you.
Yeah, and I think I felt guilty, you know, a little bit. I mean, I don't necessarily know if it was related, but I did feel, you know, guilty for my dad's, you know, brain literally exploding, you know, because I know how much stress and you know, worry I put him through. But I think that my relapse, you know, I think it had more to do with the fact that I just at that point had yet to really come to accept, you know, who I am. And I still was full of a lot of those same feelings of self-hatred. And, you know, I got involved in this really bad relationship where I was trying to, you know, fill this hole inside of me by replacing it with this girl. And, you know, when that didn't work, we both ended up, you know, going through one of the worst relapses of, I mean, the worst relapse of my life that almost killed me, you know, many times.
Well, what does methamphetamine do that to fill that hole that alcohol wouldn't do, that marijuana would do?
You know,
I'm not suggesting the use of anything.
No, but. I understand. Yeah, I think, you know, it's different for everybody. I mean, I know people who are, you know, diehard heroin addicts and they just love heroin, you know, and that wasn't my story. I mean, I could kind of take, I mean, I wouldn't do heroin now, but I mean, I could kind of take or leave it a little bit. But yeah, something about the feeling that crystal meth gave me, it was like I had this clarity and this like sense of power and like force or something. Like I could just go take on the whole world and it was, I had confidence and I felt, you know, cool and, you know, beautiful. And I mean, it was just like, it just heightened everything. And, you know, I wanted that. I wanted to hold on to that. I didn't want to let that go.
And it obviously has a wide appeal because it's the fastest growing drug in this country. Does it have a lasting impact on brain chemistry?
I don't know. I mean, according to the research that my dad's, you know, done and looked up and stuff, you know, it's supposed to be 2 years that you, you know, get your brain functioning back to normal.
So it's been over 2 years.
It's been over 2 years. So now my girlfriend, you know, says I have no more excuses to forget things and stuff. And I do still forget a lot of things, but I guess I can't blame it on the drugs anymore.
Now, you mentioned, David, earlier that you grew up in a time when everybody in school did something with drugs, even if it was light. And you were open about it with your kid.
Right.
Do you think that you should have been less open? Perhaps said, no, I Or just ignored it?
Well, you know, it's
would it have been an encouragement to tell the truth?
I thought that telling the truth was actually would actually have an impact on Nick because I felt I knew what I was talking about. I mean, I did glorify it. I never went back and said, oh, my God, those were the great old days getting high in the desert in Tucson or anything like that. It was the opposite. I mean, I had my college roommate tried methamphetamine, went out on a binge, became addicted, was addicted to meth and coke and heroin too, I think, over the years, and died. I thought I would have some credibility. You know, when I was a kid, my parents said, stay away from that, don't do drugs, but they didn't drink, they didn't smoke, they didn't even, you know, have a glass of wine at dinner, so I dismissed them. They didn't know what they were talking about. So, you know, should I have talked about it more? I actually feel like I couldn't have been dishonest about it. I could have possibly hidden it. I don't ultimately think that that was had a huge impact either way.
Nick, is there an equivalent to AA for meth addicts?
There is Crystal Meth Anonymous, but I've actually never been to one of those meetings. I mean, I feel like, you know, the 12 steps are really a universal, you know, program to really help people with. I mean, I've been to Emotions Anonymous meetings for, you know, people who are suffering from, you know, just sort of feeling things too much. And, you know, so I think that, you know, it sort of doesn't really matter what 12-step program, you know, you latch onto. I think they're all really helpful and
if you do
life-saving.
Yeah, I've gone with Nick to some of the open AA meetings or NA meetings, and people there are – it's whatever the addiction is. And
it's all pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
filling that void or whatever.
Well, you've met a few people over the years when you were interviewing celebrities for Playboy who had problems along those lines. Are you still working for Playboy?
I do, yeah. I do interviews for Playboy.
You've done Gore Vidal, John Lennon. Who else?
Well, in the current issue, Garry Kasparov, and in the upcoming issue, Fareed Zakaria. So it's interesting. And, you know, a lot of these people, actually, you know, it was a complete coincidence that when I opened Nick's book, he starts the book off with a quote from John Lennon, and my book begins with a quote from John Lennon. And obviously, I borrowed a Lennon title as well.
And the books are David Sheff's Beautiful Boy, A Father's Journey Through His Son's Addiction from Houghton Mifflin, and Nick Sheff's Tweak, Growing Up on Methamphetamines from Athenaeum. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.